News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT 704-570-1110 1-800-WBT 1110. Email is Pete at the Pete Callender Show. And thanks so much for hanging out with me. I do appreciate it. All right. So I got an email. I've been getting a lot of them from Dean. And I said the other day, I wasn't quite sure if Dean is trolling me or not. So I just read this and let you decide. Pete, don't you feel bad applying absolutes to policies just to stir up controversy? Which I've not done, by the way. I've not applied an absolute to a policy. Not today, at least, not that I'm aware of. He then goes on to say, unless you are talking about death or taxes, there are no absolutes. Except that statement, of course, right? That's an absolute. You just laid out an absolute, Dean. You literally just laid out an absolute. You said that there are no absolutes except death or taxes, which is an absolute statement. So there's a third absolute, right? Which thereby, doesn't that negate the premise of your argument? Anyway, there will always be exceptions to all actions. You are entitled to your opinion, but don't assume you're smarter than me. Maybe Biden or Trump, but not me. See what I mean? Like, I don't know what to make of this email. Are you talking to me? Are you talking to a policy that was enacted at the school board level? Or are you talking about the policy that Glenn Youngkin did? Or are you I don't know. I don't know. Don't you? But the first statement is, although I'm not sure it's framed as a question, but it doesn't have a question mark on it. So it says, don't you feel bad applying absolutes to policies just to stir up controversy? This is one of the things, by the way, that I get from time to time in the talk radio world, where people will say, oh, you're just saying this because that's what generates controversy. You're just stirring the pot. Oh, you're just saying that. You have to say that in order to make people mad or whatever. I have never done that. It is it's a cheap and lazy approach to debate when people say that to me. You don't want to deal with the merit of what it is I'm arguing, so you make a personal attack, which is that I'm a liar. Now, you're not saying that outright. You're not saying you're a liar, but you are saying I'm a liar. You're saying that I don't actually believe the thing that I just told you I believe. Now, I am able to see other sides of arguments, and I try to present those other sides of the arguments in order to flesh them out so we get an understanding of not just your argument, but my own, because I truly do believe that you don't really know your own argument unless you know your opponent's. So I try to learn my opponent's arguments. And I know that that gets frustrating because, like I talked with Raul earlier in the program, I knew his arguments. He starts saying them as if they're brand new arguments that I've never contemplated before. And maybe for the most part, the people that he encounters, they haven't. I have. I've heard all those arguments before. They're not persuasive to me. And I proceeded to walk through why they're not persuasive. And I know that that can be frustrating for people who disagree with me. Thank you to Ryan. He sent me this email from Kyle Lamb. Kyle Lamb is he's in the communications office of the governor, or was, I guess, at least at one point. I'm not sure if he still is. Yeah, it looks like he still is. So he's out of Florida. He works for DeSantis, and he does data and research. And he put out this tweet. He says, in England, surveillance of the Omicron variant found 75 deaths among 212,019 confirmed deaths. 212,000 confirmed or cases, rather. 75 deaths among 212,000 cases. That is a case fatality rate of 0.03%. Okay? And that is deaths with a positive test 28 days prior to the death. Okay? That is an infection fatality rate, case fatality rate of 0.03. The infection fatality rate of the flu is 0.1. 0.1 versus 0.03. The UK has since stopped publishing that surveillance data. Risk assessment here, folks. The variants have changed. The virus has changed. You better start changing your understanding of the virus too. Of the risks, of the lethality of it, how likely you are to catch it and die from it, how likely you are to spread it, whether therapeutics can actually help you rebound. By the way, WRAL with this story the other day. Childcare setting quarantine rules change for vaccinated staff. By the way, the U.S. Is now reporting a drop in COVID hospitalizations, the first since December 17th. Oh, it's because of all the mask mandates that went into effect, right? Is that what did it? Oh, or is it the vaccine mandates that went into effect since December 17th? Is that what happened? Why are we seeing a drop in hospitalizations? I have said this from the beginning. Viruses are going to virus. If you don't know how viruses behave, and you don't know what the peaks and the valleys and the seasonality stuff, if you don't know what that stuff looks like, please become acquainted with it. We're seeing it play out in real time. And at the very beginning, nobody knew because it was just going up. But then we saw it come down. And now we see it go up again. And then we saw it come down. Now we're in the third wave, right? They behave in certain patterns. You can see them now. So now we've got some new child care vaccination or quarantine rules, rather. If your child is vaccinated, they may not have to stay home from child care after being exposed to someone with COVID-19. So if your kid's vaccinated, but they're in child care and someone in the child care setting has COVID-19, you may not have to have the kids stay home now, according to new guidance put out by the Department of Health and Human Services. The new rules involve quarantine time in childcare settings, which have had rules that have kept many households in quarantine for 14 days. The new rules apply to adults and children fully vaccinated who come in contact with somebody with COVID-19. For adults 18 years and older, a booster shot is now required to be considered completely vaccinated. For those 5 to 17, booster shots are not required. People 5 years and older who are fully vaccinated can go to childcare as long as they don't have symptoms. People should test 5 days after their last exposure. In addition, a well-fitting mask is required to be worn when around others for 10 days. Things change if you have COVID symptoms or test positive. Regardless of age or vaccination status, these adults and children have to stay home for 5 days after the first day of symptoms, or if they have no symptoms, the day of the COVID test. A person can come back in 5 days if they have no symptoms, or if symptoms are improving, and they have been fever-free for 24 hours without the use of a fever-reducing medication, though. But the person still has to wear a mask for an additional 5 days. This is becoming insane, people. How are you supposed to follow this? And that's just half. I've only given you half of these changes. This is, you're getting to the point, it's like, it's comical, the contrived complexity at play here. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110, Pete at thepetecallinershow.com. Ray on Getter says, Pete, this Rasmussen poll you're going over is terrifying, but not really surprising. Trump and COVID, paired with the media's boogeyman coverage of these things, has broken people's brains and their ability to think critically, if that ability ever really existed. Part of the problem, I mentioned something along the lines of this earlier, is the model itself by which we rely on kids to be educated, this K-12 government model, government schools model. I have been calling them government schools for almost 20 years, and they are. And it was not something I came to all on my own. I heard Neil Bortz, the libertarian talk show host out of Atlanta, We used to carry his program on WBT before he retired, and he used to call them government schools. And his explanation, which I was persuaded by, was that it is in fact funded by the government, right? That's how it gets its funding. That's how it is governed. That's who does the hiring and the firing and all of that, and you know, the compulsion to attend, all of that stuff is through the government. Now, there are certain things that come with that, like a particular viewpoint. And his argument was that if I sent my kids to Catholic school, do you think I would learn that Catholicism stinks? Or do you think I might learn that Catholicism is awesome? If I sent my kids to a Jewish private school or a Muslim mosque private school, madras, right? Like if I sent them to a religious school, would I learn that that religion is good or bad? Generally speaking, would they take a really critical eye towards the institution that's delivering that education to me or to the kid? Or do you think they might give it a bit of a, I don't know, you know, bit of a whitewash, maybe promote it a little bit? And that is a persuasive argument as one who attended government schools. I went to a K-12 public school, and as such, I remember I had some good teachers, I had some bad teachers. I covered schools, Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, for over a decade. I got to see the bureaucracy, the educrats in action. That can be either one or two words, in action or inaction. I got to see it firsthand, and I got to see sort of the cycles of this is the next greatest thing ever. This is how kids are going to learn, and we're going to ensure that every child achieves. And then they roll it out, they get a bunch of money, they study it, it doesn't work, and then they move on to something else. I watched how superintendents bounce around from district to district, collecting pensions from different states. So I am aware of how, waiting for Superman, I've watched Reformers, I've heard the arguments. The problem is the model, and it always has been. And I understand, though, that there were a lot of people that have nostalgia for the model that they remember from their youth. And they thought it was a good model because look at me, I turned out fine, right? But this, the tie-in here to COVID is much the same, which is the need to adapt. Do you think this is the best way to deliver an education now? There are things that, you know, coming together in a school environment are good for. But one of the things that always kills me when you hear, and I mentioned Roy Cooper, who made some comment on it. It was an Education Matters video. I've got the clip here that's making the rounds. Here, hang on a second. Let me play it.
And this money's unaccountable. We have no way of knowing whether the students that are going to these private schools are getting the kind of education that they
need. That they need. It cuts off the end. That they need. We have no idea if they're getting the kinds of education that they need. I mean, despite the fact that you have to report test results, but also, are kids at K-12 government schools, are they getting the kind of education that they need too? Because there are a lot of schools that are not providing that at all, right? This idea that perfection is one of the options available to us has never made sense to me. I find it to be a bad faith argument usually asserted by defenders of the K-12 status quo. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the model for choice, it already exists in education. It exists at higher education. We have publicly supported taxpayer-funded colleges. And we have different size colleges. They have different focuses and stuff. Some school, and I've said this before, I went to a college. I went to Winthrop University in Rock Hill. And It was a state school. It is a state school. It has no football program. It was a small school. It was the cheapest state school when I first went there. Of course, by the time I left, it was the most expensive because the president went on a building tear and everybody loved him. I don't know why, but whatever. It's a different fight for a different decade. But the point here is that that school offered me something that I wanted. And I didn't need a massive football program. I didn't need classes of 200 people. I didn't want that. I didn't need that. I wanted a small school setting. And I wanted to be somewhere in the South. I wanted it to be cheap so I wouldn't be in debt for the rest of my life. These were the choices that I was looking for, and Winthrop fit the bill. And they also offered me money. So, like, all of those things. That's a voucherized kind of an idea, is it not? There's parental choice at the college level. Why is this like such an objectionable idea at other levels of education? Because it's about protecting the institution or protecting the adults in the institution. It's not about the kids. And a tweet from the Michigan Democrat Party is a perfect illustration of this. I'll get to that after the news. But first, let's do some news. Here's Mark Mueller. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Pete Callender here. The Michigan Democrat Party put out a tweet the other day saying, not sure where this whole parents should control what's taught in schools because there are kids is originating. Like that, they put that in quote, in quotation marks, and then they dashed it all. So it's like parents dash should dash control dash, which is really annoying to type out. So, in other words, this mentality of parents should control what's taught in schools because there are kids. Like, they're not sure where this is originating, but parents do have the option to choose to send their kids to a hand-selected private school at their own expense if this is what they desire. The arrogance required to formulate that sentence. They go on to say, the purpose of a public education in a public school is not to teach kids only what parents want them to be taught. It is to teach them what society needs them to know. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree that's the point, is what society needs them to know. The problem here is we disagree with your assessment of what kids need to know. See, that's the problem. But you want to say that you're right. They move right past that. They blow right past the assumption, which is that they're correct in their assessment of what your kid needs to know. And they blow right past that. And so your objection is fundamentally in error because we've already told you your kid needs to know this. Wait a minute. You're saying my kid needs to know that the color of their skin dictates their guilt for some historical wrong? You're saying my kid needs to know that? I disagree. Well, if you disagree with that, then you obviously should just take your kid to a private school. Racist. They finally closed their tweet by saying that the client of the public school is not the parent, but the entire community, the public. The client of the public school is not the parent, but the entire community. This is collectivism, right? This is what I mean. The problem is the model, people. The model was developed. This is the Prussian model. It's a factory model. It was developed with this idea that you want to crank out sort of products, and the products are the kids. We're not, to quote one of the founders of the government factory model, we are not trying to create men of letters. Right? That's not the purpose of this education model. The purpose is to crank out good citizens, right, to this extent, is to teach them what society needs them to know. And the original model was just enough math, just enough reading and writing so they could run the factories. That they could come in from the farms, they could come into the cities, they would be able to run the factories, right? They would be able to be productive members of the society. This is what the purpose of the system was. And you can find all of this stuff. It's the people wrote about it extensively while they were doing it. This is what we want to do. And if you go down that path, you're going to see all the writings and such. So the Michigan Democratic Party, after having solved all of the education problems in Detroit, they're now lecturing parents on this idea, like, how dare you suggest that you should control what is taught in public schools. Corey DeAngelis, who is a school reform activist, he said that they said the quiet part out loud. And they have now posted another tweet about an hour or so ago that says, we have deleted a post that ignored the important role that parents play and should play in Michigan public schools. So, they have caught some poop here, haven't they? Parents need to have a say in their children's education. End of story. I love how they talk in this authoritative lecture tone to me. Like, you just said something really, really stupid. Why am I listening to you as if you have some sort of position of credibility or authority to continue talking to me in that same tone that you literally just said something stupid in, right? The post does not reflect the views of Michigan Democrats and should not be misinterpreted as a statement of support from our elected officials or candidates. So in other words, please don't vote against all of the Democrats. They didn't say that. This is just the party account. We got some moron who just sent out something. I mean, yes, we all agree with it, but they said the quiet part out loud, and that was totally not the fault of the candidate. So please don't vote against our candidates. It's just, again, it's the same mentality that Roy Cooper exhibited the other day in that interview.
And this money's unaccountable. We have no way of knowing whether the students that are going to these private schools are getting the kind of education that they
need. I swear, I don't know why it cuts off the last part there. They don't know. This money is just all unaccountable. These schools are unaccountable. The vouchers that parents take, which, by the way, don't even amount to the same cost as the government charges to educate a kid for a year. A voucher is less money than the cost to educate a kid in a K-12 government school. Oh, and by the way, my use of the term government school, this has now shown up on the radar of Thomas Mills, our pal over there at politicsnc.com. He wrote a piece the other day about this. It was called Government Schools. And he says Republicans have started to refer to government schools as a derogatory term for traditional public schools. They're trying to attach a stigma to public education while pushing. All right, now hang on a second. Do you think attaching the word government to schools, like, that attaches a stigma more so than the the performance of the public schools that has attached a stigma to public schools? You think the word government does that, but not the performance. Okay. He says while they're pushing for more funding for voucher schemes that drain both resources and talent from public schools. Their goal is to increase demand for private academies and charter schools that have little oversight, despite being largely funded with taxpayer dollars. By the way, this has always been something that the schools, all of these schools, the charters and the private schools, they have oversight. They have boards. All of them have boards. They have laws that apply. They do. Actual laws. Like, if you do stuff like you'll go to jail if you steal money and that sort of thing. Like, there are laws that apply. There are rules from, especially like charters. Charter schools are public schools. There are rules that apply to charter schools. You have to produce also your end of course testing and stuff like that. You got to give those numbers and such. And here's the other thing too. Parents, how long do you think that parents are going to keep sending their kids to a private school if that private school doesn't educate the kid? If a school is run completely off of vouchers, by the way, which actually, if you look at who gets the vouchers and uses them, it's poor people generally. I mean, that's the vast majority of people that are using the vouchers are kids trying to get out of failing schools. Anyway, if you think that the parents are going to keep sending their kids to failing private schools, once they've already chosen to send the kid to that school, you might not have a good understanding of the way people behave, because no one is going to keep sending their kid to the school that's failing. That's why they leave in the first place. The very thing that drives a parent out of the school and takes the voucher is the very reason why they're going to require that the school perform. And here's the thing. If that school doesn't perform well, you know what happens to that school? It closes. Failure is one of the options available to that school. Unlike the K-12 government school model, where if you fail, you get more money. Yeah, you get more money. That's the reason why. Teachers get bonuses and stuff to recruit them to go work there, and turnaround teams may be deployed, and the state may even come in and take it over. But the school doesn't close. It just keeps doing what it's doing. So who's really lacking in accountability there? All right, I got a couple of... a correction to make. It was a Facebook post that the Michigan Democratic Party put out. Sorry, it wasn't on the Twitter machine. It was on the Facebook. I apologize. Oh, sorry. The metaverse. Is that what it is now? The metaverse. Monica points out also here the Democratic Party's post that says the purpose of public education is not to teach kids only what parents want them to be taught. It's to teach them what society needs to know. And so along those lines, she has a screenshot of what they have been able to teach the kids in sixth grade math. Only 29% are proficient. So apparently that's not one of the things society needs them to know. Math, third grade math, not so much either. Third grade reading, no. 8th and 11th grade students who scored proficient above or above on the reading and math, 63% and 56%. So 63% on reading, or I'm sorry, and writing was 56. In 5th grade social studies, only 16% of students are proficient. So that's what they want people to know. That's what they, yeah, by their definition. Adam says, Pete, the problem that Thomas Mills and the Democratic Party have with the charter schools and private schools is not that they have no oversight. It's that the oversight is by parents rather than unelected bureaucrats. And that is precisely correct, Adam, precisely correct. And Monica also points out, number one, that they are the parents, and number two, they are taxpayers, and surprise, they are also the public, right? Parents are the public too, not just the people who work at the schools. But see, this is the shifting. It's like Tony Fauci saying, I'm the science, right? It's I am the public schools. I work in the schools, and so I'm the schools, because I'm the public. And the larger government apparatus is the public schools. And then they sort of conflate the general sense of the community with them. That's what I said. The fundamental premise is flawed in that they assume they're right. They assume that like their pedagogy, the method of teaching, they assume that the material, they assume all of that is correct. They assume that what they have determined to be worthy of teaching is, in fact, the things that should be taught, that they are correct. They assume that. And maybe they are correct, by the way. I'm not saying they're not. But there is room for debate. And this idea that, like Thomas Mills goes over in his piece at politicsnc.com, he says that the Republicans are attacking society's commitment to public education. It is, in part, radical individualism. They don't believe in the concept of public good. See, there again, there's an ascribing of motive. See, now, I don't ascribe motive to people like Thomas Mills. I assume that you want the best for the kids. Because, I mean, honestly, like, if I assume that you were actually trying to harm children with this model, I mean, there's plenty of evidence that I could cite to back that up. But it would require that I advance that as a premise first. And I'm not going to do that to you because I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I would prefer people do that for me as well. I want kids to be educated, and I want them to be as prepared for success in life as possible. And that means learning from successful people, and it means learning skills, and that includes critical thinking, but it also includes like certain things that you do with your hands, like some manual skills that you need to learn and should learn so you'll be successful. Little things. Seriously. I mean, like the home ec stuff, I always hated those classes, but I still know how to sew a pillow because of that. I know how to sew up a rip in my jeans. That was a life skill. That was pretty good. I appreciate having learned that. And yes, I learned it in a government school. I also would have really liked to have learned how to code. That would have been helpful. Now, I mean, I was sort of front end of the computer, the advent of computers and PCs and stuff. So we weren't, I remember a buddy of mine, he took a Fortran class or something. But I wasn't interested in that. I did take typing, so I can type very quickly. So there are certain things that, how about financial literacy? Like that. How about this? Civics. How about that we are a republic and that democracies are, four wolves and a lamb voting on dinner? Why? How about the Federalist model and why that is a superior model? How about this? Capitalism and the benefits that capitalism has brought. I understand that there are downsides to capitalism, too. Absolutely. Because capitalism is an apolitical kind of a structure. You can use it. It's like money. You can use it for good or bad. You have to just want to use it for the good or the bad, and you can employ it towards such purposes. And I am always... This is why... I was going to say I'm always suspicious of others who try to force me to adopt whatever their standard of good and bad is when it comes to, how I spend my money or how I employ capitalism. I don't need you to do that for me because I have been taught an ethic. And that comes from parents. It comes from church and civic organizations and the like. You don't really get that in the government school because, once again, what is a government education is going to be teaching you what? That a lot of the answers can be found in government, right? And that's not the case. That's what makes America so different, is that we don't look towards that. This isn't radical individualism. In fact, the individuals band together with their community organizations, recognizing the value, the force multiplier that you can have when you get a bunch of people together all, sort of pulling in one direction. Why do you think radio stations do the kinds of charitable works that we do? Right? We do this because we recognize the value of getting everybody together for a goal. Raise a bunch of money, collect a bunch of bicycles, right? Help a bunch of people. You can do that in a civic organization. You can do that in a business. You can do it in a church. We don't require government to do the things and to force us into those relationships. In fact, I would submit it actually engenders resentment when you do that to people. If you ask them to participate, then you get the people, you get the willing. Not the draft. It's an all-volunteer military kind of thing. It's a better fighting force because they want to be there. But for some people, I guess, much like with the COVID stuff, it's, why aren't they doing these things that I want them to do? So I'm going to force you to do it. I'm going to mandate your participation in this thing that I say is good. And of course, that assumes that you're correct. And if you're not correct, well, now you've just made a decision that's wrong for a lot of people, right? Never a wrong decision. Listening to Brett Winterville, he's up next. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Thanks for hanging out with me. I do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't break anything while I'm gone.